On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we discuss the Blue Jays and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. failing to come to terms on a long-term extension, what that means for Vlad, what that means for the Blue Jays. We talk about the Red Sox infield alignment, who will be playing third base. Rafael Devers says it will be him. Do we believe him? We will see. Jose Altuve is moving to left field. Shohei Ohtani doesn't know how to park that, and so much more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that will never switch positions, no matter how much it helps this podcast. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. I'm a podcaster. That's where I play.
Yeah, there's really nothing worth debating. I don't know why this is such a big deal. We've been sharing the same position here for years, and I don't think we've really ever had any issues, but it seems like at this point in spring training, this is a constant topic at multiple camps across this league.
Look, just play two people at the same position. That's my solution. Red Sox, two third basemen, cover more ground. Who says no? On this episode, we will be talking about positional strife. Jordan saw Rob Manfred spit in person. Good, bad, ugly. But we have to begin, as always, with the opener. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will not be extended by the Toronto Blue Jays and will reach free agency this upcoming winter. This news came out on Tuesday. Vladimir had set a deadline for himself. It's funny just to call him Vladimir, even though I guess that is his name. Vladimir set himself a deadline. That deadline came and went with he and the Blue Jays not agreeing to a number. What say you?
So I have been pretty consistent on this show and off this show, saying that I thought that they would figure this out. I looked at the situation. I looked at the way that Vlad talked about Toronto. I looked at the larger situation for the Toronto Blue Jays as an organization, a team that has come up short bringing in players from the outside on multiple occasions. Of course, they have signed a number of free agents this winter, but the most important decision they were going to make was whether or not to extend Vlad. And it seems like, not unrelated to some of the other activity of this offseason, most notably including Juan Soto receiving nearly $800 million, a player who I can understandably imagine that Vladimir Guerrero views as a peer, I think that probably changed the negotiations. I think that probably changed the mathematic goals,
request,
the financial pursuits of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I think now we got to a point where when we talk about the extensions and we see places, we see teams and players, it's not like there haven't been long-term extensions reached across the league, but at this stage, it is, if you're going to get this close to free agency, it's going to be pretty rare to see these things actually hammered out at this point. I think players, because of their situations, are always going to be like, listen, I'm trusting that I can get to the open market and make either the same or more. We know that hasn't necessarily worked out for all players, but that's another thing that worked out for Juan Soto, right? That's another parallel here. The Nationals offered Juan Soto a ton of money, and there were a lot of people saying at the time, Why are you turning that down, dude? There's no way that this player who's all about his bat, remember the same thing, it was like, well, if he's going to be able to keep that up, you know, I don't know if he's going to be able to get that much more in free agency. Now that's laughable. Now, I think it's fair to acknowledge that Soto is a tier above. A lot of that is because of the floor, right? Juan Soto has never had a season as bad as Vlad Jr. has at his low points. At the same time, when you're talking about the ceiling, it ain't that different. It ain't that different. You're talking about the overall defensive value. It ain't that different. And so that has to be part of the calculation.
And the age is not that
different. That is most important right now. Vlad, at this point, is going to be reaching free agency, I think a year older than Juan Soto, but still a very uniquely young age. And part of that is, while the deal is going to end up being some extreme length as it was with Soto, it's as much about paying for them still obviously in their prime. And the idea that you can get a player who could conceivably have an MVP in front of them is a rare opportunity. And I think that's where Vlad saw his valuation, understandably. And unfortunately for Blue Jays fans and for me, who sounds stupid, who thought this would get done, they couldn't get there. And I think that sucks.
Let's establish Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s level, I think. I think that's important to understand as we kind of move forward. So he debuts in 2019. Everybody knows who he is because his name is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And for the first two seasons of his career, he's pretty good, right? Now he's 20 and 21 for those seasons, but he's pretty good. Finishes sixth in Rookie of the Year, which kind of feels low when you think about it, right? Like, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. smells like a dude who won Rookie of the Year.
Well, here's good context, right? Here's who he finishes behind Rookie of the Year that year. Kevin Biggio, who was, you know, his teammate and was, you know, getting on base a bunch, and it was a little bit different. But yes, Vlad was the youngest. I don't know if he was the youngest player in the league at that point, but he was certainly, he got to the big leagues. His minor league numbers were like otherworldly, right? I mean, with him as a prospect was like, oh my gosh, this is something beyond anything we've seen in a while.
Then in 2021, after the panorama, he explodes. Finishes second in the MVP that season with an OPS above 1,000. He hits 48 home runs. Batting average is .311. Otani wins MVP because, you know, Vlad did not pitch that year. But we see Vlad do this and we're like, oh, okay, this was one of the best 10 hitters in the world. This is one of the best 5 hitters in the world, right? Yeah. This is an elite, elite player. Then he kind of takes a step back the next two seasons. He's still pretty good. He makes all-star teams in 22 and in 23, but he's merely good. He's not elite. And then a year ago, he returns to that elite level, finishing sixth in the MVP with an OPS adjusted 66% better than the league average. He is an outstanding player. Now, one of the other important things to understand about Guerrero's value and why I think he will command an outrageous number on the open market and why he decided to decline this extension offer: he plays ball games. That matters. It mattered with Soto, and it matters here. He is, I believe, seventh in baseball in games played, excuse me, in plate appearances, eighth in games played since he debuted, since the start of the 2019 season. Okay. That is a huge deal because teams want players that they can pencil in there every day that are dependable. So I think when you understand all these factors and you compare him to Juan Soto, it's pretty simple to understand why in this particular context, Guerrero was like, I'm not taking an extension, because he's so close and the number for Soto was so high, and that definitely changed the calculus, that it's almost a bad business. It's a bad business decision if he would have said yes, in my opinion. I like, even if the number was outrageous, even if you like Toronto, who's going to be bidding for Juan Soto? Excuse me. Who's going to be bidding for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this winter? The same teams that were bidding for Juan Soto: the New York Mets and the New York Yankees, and probably also the Boston Red Sox and the Toronto Blue Jays. It's very similar. That number is going to go higher than we think, just like it did a year ago.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. The two other things I would say about the situation: one is it is hard to talk about this because as we stand now, we do not have formal, this was this offer, this was what he asked for. We don't have that as it is sitting, right? We've heard enough reports that says that number was maybe a lot higher than we thought. Did it start with a 5? Did it start with a 4? Like, you can, so can we make really strong judgments about what he turned down, what he didn't? No, we can't. But I think your broad point is absolutely correct. Now, on the other side of it, you know, we're talking about the comparison with Juan Soto. I think that is fair. Everyone says, well, wait a minute, Pete Alonso, that guy plays all the time. That guy's a first baseman. That guy's been productive. That guy's beloved by his team. And that guy got nothing. He got nothing. He got the free agency and he got nothing. Nobody wanted him. Why is everybody going to want Vlad Jr.? Well, the one thing is the age. And the other thing is that the ceiling, right? Because as a hitter, what Vlad has done both this past year and, as you know, in 2021 is way better than anything Pete has done, right? Pete on the total, just like stacking stats, you know, collecting home runs and RBIs, like, yes, he's up there. But in terms of the complete hitter and the trend, by the way, also the seasons that they're coming off of right now,
Yeah.
Pete has never been as good. I know his rookie year was something close, but the two of Vlad's best seasons are two of the best offensive seasons we've had in the last decade. And so that's the kind of player that is just not accessible in most cases. And the fact that the Blue Jays already have that and could not find a way to keep him for the long term, when you're looking at a roster that is still pretty good right now, but is very old on the pitching side. And on the offensive side, there's really no very limited star talent that you can really build around for the long term. And for a team that's willing to spend a bunch of money and has a bunch of money coming off the books in the next couple of years, I thought this would be the one that they would just say, all right, let's make it happen no matter what it costs. And they just couldn't.
It is a failure on behalf of the Toronto organization that this did not get done. They, by all indications, gave it a real good go over the last month and made a competitive offer now. But the fault, the mistake, is in the procrastination.
Yes.
What Vlad was asking for at this point is probably a ludicrous number because he just had a great season and Juan Soto just got the GDP of a Caribbean country, right? Like, those factors are incredibly relevant here. If you had seriously engaged in extension conversations a year and a half ago, you think Vlad takes $300 million, yeah, right? Maybe. He definitely takes $400
million
a year ago.
I would assume.
And now it feels like he wouldn't, yeah, right? And so for me, it's the Blue Jays having the hubris to believe they could do this eventually in kicking the can down the road and focusing their energy, their resources, their time on trying to woo Soto or Otani or whomever instead of keeping the guy who's already there around for the long term. If Guerrero leaves in free agency, and it seems like he will, this is a generational mistake for this organization. It is a huge deal, massive, because he is a Canadian citizen,
yeah,
right? He loves it there. You developed him yourself and you couldn't keep him around. It will shadow and follow the Toronto Blue Jays for a long time.
And that's the thing. It's so much more personal and painful. And listen, there could be a great season ahead for Vlad in Toronto and they could make it back to the postseason and maybe that rekindles things and he goes back, whatever. But again, if we keep doing the Juan Soto parallel, which there's going to be a lot of going into the season where it's like, oh, can they keep him? Can they keep him? But it's like, listen, Juan Soto was a mercenary for the Yankees.
Mercenary.
And by the way, a damn good one. It's not like it didn't work out. Like this was still a successful.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, you value wise, was it a successful trade for the Yankees? Maybe not. Whatever. I mean, yes, like it was great, and there could still be great times ahead for Toronto this year. Now it's one of the most pressure filled, arguably the most pressure filled situation to win in the league, or certainly in the handful of them. And that's frustrating because now it's just going to be hanging over it. And then if they lose five games in a row, everyone's going to say, oh, got to trade them. You know, the Yankees obviously never had to deal with that with Soto, but we've seen versions of that before. And so that's also part of what you're going to have to deal with is that, yes, you do still have one more season with him, but now you know how it's going to be perceived. Now you know the conversation that is going to be around it as it is happening. And that's also part of the cost that you're paying by not getting a deal done.
Jays fans, I'm sorry.
Yeah. This sucks.
This sucks.
Yeah.
This
and,
sucks.
And the other thing is, I know there's also probably some people listening to being like, well, why can't they just get a deal done next week? And I suppose that's possible. Obviously, Vlad had kind of set this deadline for the start of full workouts. I'm also going off of, Mark Shapiro spoke about this. And he said, we're disappointed. We're disappointed we didn't get a deal done. And then people ask him, was it close? Did you almost get a deal done? He said, quote, there's no such thing as close. It's either done or not done.
Not true. Not true.
So that's not true.
That's not true.
That's
that doesn't
not true.
Make any sense.
Okay. Well,
that is
right.
Time out. Yellow card for Mark Shapiro, GM speak. There's no such thing as close. There is such thing as close.
Yeah.
In a deal.
Yeah. I know.
That's
right.
Total.
And he still said, right, the door is open, always be open. So I don't know if negotiations are like, I don't know if they go to Vlad next week and they say, here's $600 million. If he's going to say, sorry, that was my deadline. It's not happening. Like maybe there's still another chapter to the story, but the way that everyone who is really around the Blue Jays is talking about this is that they are moving on from it, and that's obviously how Vlad is talking about it. So we just have to accept that this is going to be, I mean, especially at the deadline, because Toronto is, I think they can be good, but that this obviously will be a massive deal if they get to July and are, you know, 15 games back. Like, then now we're going to be talking about Vlad being traded. But yeah, I don't know, man. I could see it, by the way, mirroring Bryce Harper, honestly, at that point. Where
so that, here's that my question.
Yeah.
Does Vlad Jr. appear in the playoffs this year?
That's a good question. You're making me make my Blue Jays pick right now, because to me, I don't think they're going to be enough out of it to trade him. This is why I brought up Bryce Harper. I don't remember exactly where the Nationals were in Bryce Harper's last year.
Here's why that's a bad example. There was a deal done with Harper going to the Astros, agreed upon by the general manager,
and then what happened?
The Nats ownership group struck it down.
Okay, so again, I'm saying I could see that being a thing too, right? Where it's like the front office is doing their job, and then ownership's like, no, I'd still rather people pay to see Vlad Jr. for another couple months. I don't know. And I guess my point is I don't think the Blue Jays are going to be far enough out of it that they're going to be compelled to trade him. And so I think by saying that, I'm probably also saying that they're going to keep him, and then they're not going to make the playoffs. And then, no, he won't play in the playoffs this year.
I agree with you. I think the answer is no. And I think that is the exact way it plays out. We saw this with Ohtani.
Yeah.
It was so similar. The emotion and the incentives of the decision makers is really relevant. And for Shapiro and Ross Atkins, it's super relevant, right? Because it's like their jobs are on the line, right?
Well, certainly.
So it's like their contracts, but their contracts are up within the next handful of years. I believe Atkins is after this year. Shapiro has two more years, or maybe vice versa.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, let's say you trade Vlad. Okay, well, you're not running the next good Jays team. So it's in your best interest to keep him around and try and make the playoffs and save your gig. So I just don't, find it difficult to see a scenario where he gets traded unless the Jays are like competing with the White Sox at the bottom of the league. Anything else on this?
Let's take a quick break. Let's hope they don't do what the Angels did, which is trade real prospects to try and make the playoffs.
That's a great tip for all you kids.
And then immediately lose like 8 of your next 9 or whatever happened. But
kids,
I will always think of that run whenever Edgar Caro makes the big leagues with the White Sox, which will happen soon. All right. Anyway, Miss Jays fans, we're sorry.
Don't do what the Angels do. Just that's a good piece of advice. Good way to follow.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Vlad, I still love him, and I wish him the best, and I hope that he's
Vladimir.
Awesome. Vladimir, I hope he is great this year.
When's the last time someone referred to him as Vladimir in full, you think? Probably like a fan asking for an autograph.
Oh.
Vladimir!
Oh, yeah.
Vladimir.
Yeah, it's a good way to get his attention, I'm sure. All right, we are going to take a quick break. When we return, Red Sox Astros are still sort of related. We will be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. The Boston Red Sox had good vibes rolling around camp for about 24 hours. They swooped in and signed Alex Bregman to a very compelling deal, bringing in the 25-time ALCS participant as an infielder on their roster. And he shows up to camp and he shouts out Dustin Pedroia as a factor in bringing him in. And the Red Sox are not just going to win the World Series, they're going to, you know, cure the common cold, and they're going to climb Mount Everest, and, you know, the ceiling is the roof. And then, the following day, Rafael Devers is asked whether he would be willing to DH in order to create a more optimal defensive alignment. And he gave a very simple two-letter answer. Jordan, could you give it to me?
No. I think the best part of this clip, when Devers was asked, like, hey, you just be a DH, right? Bregman's obviously the better third baseman, won the Gold Glove last year. You are stinky at defense, Rafael. do it for the team, my guy. And he's like, no, no, not going to do that.
Nope.
More interesting was then he, Rafi Devers, gets a little bit of backup from Tristan Casas. Now, this is funny for a lot of reasons, right? Because what do they say? They ask Tristan Casas, what do you think about this? Always good to ask Tristan Casas what he thinks, because my God, this guy will tell you.
I want to know what he thinks about the tariffs.
That's why we love him. Tristan Casas, what do you think? He says, quote, I think it's Rafi Devers' position. He's done it for a really long time now. I think he's only getting better at that position. I think he's the best third baseman in the league. I wouldn't take anybody over him. Now, Jake, why is this a especially funny answer that I don't think I've seen pointed out, even though it should be fairly obvious? Why would Tristan Casas want Rafael Devers to play third base?
Because if he doesn't, then Rafael Devers would be playing first base. And that's where Tristan Casas plays.
Yes. Or at least some combination that would probably result in Rafael Devers play or Tristan Casas playing less first base. That part is funny. But more importantly, it's like, whoa, Tristan Casas, oh, best third baseman in the league. What a joke. Especially when you literally just signed Alex Bregman, who at least has an argument as one of the best third basemen in the league. The point is this a big deal? I don't.
Well, can we work backwards? Well,
oh,
I
sure.
want to work backwards.
There's more Tristan Casas, folks. Don't worry.
Yeah. Is Rafael Devers the best third baseman in the league? No, it's Jose Ramirez. Good job, everybody. Good
yes, conversation. All right,
great
on.
To be. Cool. Is it a ridiculous statement? No. If you go by offensive production last year, Rafael Devers was actually the second best third baseman in baseball.
Oh,
by he what? Was. Now, yeah. By WRC plus.
Yeah. No, he's definitely one of them.
Now, I would say if you copy and paste that offensive production and put it somewhere else, it might be more optimal considering he's not a good defender. He has never been a good defender. And considering that he is only getting older and less mobile, he will probably never be a good defender. Now, what should Devers have said? Not what he said. He should not have said what he said or how he said it. Even if he feels that way, he should have lied if he needed to. Here's why. It's not worth all the strife, all the public jibber jabber. You and me getting on these microphones and prognosticating about whether this matters. It's just not worth it. Rafi, would you play DH? You know, obviously, I see myself as a third baseman, and I would prefer to do that. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Done. Easy.
Then it's just not a story.
For sure. That's not a story, right? Now, I do not, maybe this is going against the grain, I do not fault Devers for thinking this, right?
No, not at all.
To be an elite athlete, you have to be irrational all the time. Have to. There is a scenario where Rafi Devers goes out there and is the third baseman. If he sits up there and says, you know what, Alex Bregman's is better at me than this, like, whatever. That these guys can't think that way. And they don't think that way.
That would be even weirder. That would be.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Like, I understand how it played, but Rafi Devers, even though he's not good at this thing, he has to convince himself that he could be. That is the mental gymnastics at play here. And so The problem here is that he said the truth.
Well, but I think that also, like, I know why it's easy to focus on the defense when we're comparing Rafael Devers, the defender, and Alex Bregman, the Gold Glover. And so if you're just focused on, like, well, that is stupid because he would make them better. Remember, there's other parts of this equation. Is what is second base, right? Do people want that to happen because they would rather have Christian Campbell, top prospect, playing second, Bregman playing third, moving Devers to DH or first, and then I don't know what you do with Yoshida. Or you could say that actually the best lineup, the best team, the best offense right now is Alex Bregman at second base with Devers at third, with Yoshida still in the lineup as he's still been an above average hitter, with Casas playing first. You could say that is still the best team. And so that is obviously what the Red Sox are clearly trying to figure out right now. Because the whole reason this even started is because Alex Cora, despite talking about Alex Bregman publicly as a second baseman for the entire winter, has now gotten to the point where it's like, well, we'll see how the defense shakes out. Which once again appears to be perhaps a discrepancy in opinion between different parts of the Red Sox leadership. which was already the case involving whether they were going to sign Bregman in the first place. And now you have a situation where it wouldn't surprise me if Craig Breslow is like, Rafael Devers should not be playing third base, right? You can imagine Craig Breslow is looking at this objectively and being like, this is stupid. Why are we doing this? And there's other factors involved here. So it will be interesting to see how this shakes out. Obviously, we haven't even started playing games yet. Games do begin this weekend, and we will start to learn how they feel about this as Cora starts writing lineups, as we see is Christian Campbell playing every single spring training game at second base. You know, another thing that Tristan Cass was asked about, like, do you think these young guys should make the team out of camp? And he was also like Rafael Devers, no. he said, no, like, we got veteran guys, like, those guys should be on the team yet, which that is even more rare to see that kind of honesty, to be like, no, I don't think these guys should make the team, especially at this point in camp. Now, if Christian Campbell goes out, is like obviously one of the Red Sox best players in the next month, Tristan Cass will look a little goofy. We will see. The point is this is a developing story, regardless of the feelings involved. And I do think that how this Red Sox position player group comes together, because we're dealing with a lot of different levels of ego and expectations and talent levels, is really compelling. And for a team that desperately needs to like be good again soon and has the talent to do so, I'm intrigued to see how it shakes out.
Keep saying interesting things, everyone. Like, what you should say is, we'll see. But for us, thanks.
Yeah. And by the way, I also want to say that in the event where all the Red Sox pitchers make it to opening day healthy, there's also going to be like similar discourse about the rotation.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But interesting stuff in Red Sox world. I mentioned comparing the Red Sox and the Astros. We're going to save Altuve for later.
Time out.
Oh, yeah?
We picked the wrong year to do the Netflix documentary.
Yeah, people have. Tough. And by the way, I believe that's actually coming out on like April something. So we'll have to watch that. We'll do some maybe reviewing of that very unremarkable Red Sox season that occurred a year ago, and maybe they missed out. I know we'll get plenty of Tristan Cass, though. That I'm quite confident in, and that in and of itself should be plenty entertaining. We're going to save Jose Altuve chat for a little bit later, as we keep the theme of position changes. We'll do that later on in the show. One more thing just before we take our second break is Rob Manfred spoke. He's the commissioner. He does this.
What'd he say?
Once a year, not once a year, but only a handful of times does he stand in front of a bunch of reporters and let them ask whatever they want. That is obviously not something he's going to do regularly, but this is one of the times that they are doing it at the media day here in Phoenix. This was also part of the reason why he was doing it here, although this was not anything that literally nobody asked him about this. But the ABS challenge system is coming to spring training. This is automatic ball strike system that has been in the minor leagues at different levels for a while. We are going to be testing that in, I believe, over 60% of spring training games will have this system in place, where teams are allowed or able to challenge two ball or strike calls a game. And then if you are successful, you can retain those challenges. They did a whole demonstration. I'm excited to talk more about that, but that can be a bigger topic on another day. But that was part of why MLB, the whole MLB world with Morgan Sword and the whole, you know, Manfred squad was in Phoenix together. But when Manfred was answering questions, nobody even asked him about that, because 80% of the questions were, are the Dodgers bad for baseball? And so he found many different ways to say no, but I think there were some interesting answers that I wrote a little bit about. I don't know if you saw any of the quotes, but again, I was gonna say, as far as Manfred pressers go, this one was pretty low key. Like, he didn't say anything where everyone was looking around like, oh my god, can you believe he said that, which has been the case unfortunately too often.
I'm currently recording this podcast in the room where a year ago I asked him, asked Rob Manfred, when the A's leave, how are you going to serve the people of Oakland who care about baseball? And he told them to go across the bridge into San Francisco and watch the Giants. That happened here in this room. So he is very susceptible to a little flubbery from time to time. He avoided that here. I'm kind of bummed out no one asked him the following question. Rob, do you have abs?
Why would you?
ABS.
Oh, okay. I didn't get that one. I was gonna say, as far as Jake Mintz jokes, that was pretty low on my meter. I guess you could have asked him that. I think he would have been. If I didn't get it, I'm quite confident Rob Manfred would have been very confused.
Let's talk about the Dodgers. So I don't care about this anymore. Are they good for baseball? Are they bad for baseball? We have played this out. We have squeezed the towel dry. Everyone here is asking similar questions. No one is going to give a compelling answer at this point. We can revisit this discussion when the Dodgers are either 20 games out of first place in July or win the World Series. Until then, yeah. I would like to throw this on hiatus.
I think that's fair. The main quote, he was very clear. His quote, among the many answers I'm going to give about this, if I'm going to be critical of something, it's not going to be the Dodgers, it's going to be the system. That was my biggest takeaway. He also was asked about competitive balance, and I thought that his discussion about competitive balance and the fan perception, because what really matters is not whether he thinks that they're bad for baseball now, it's whether he views as the fans' perception of the market, which he acknowledges. He said, we care about how the fans feel. That has been a consistent thing that he has said. And you can roll your eyes at that. And you can also say, well, this is kind of how they ended up changing the rules, because they pulled a bunch of fans and were like, this is what you want. This is what is going to make things better. And in some cases, he was right. And in some cases, it took a little bit of time. But the quote that I wrote about, which I thought was interesting, was talking about free agency. And this was compelling to me in terms of how he's talking about the teams, because when you're talking about the Dodgers, it's like, yeah, they're signing all these free agents, but it's also what other teams aren't doing. And so I thought this quote was interesting. He said, quote, maybe as important as any of those perceptions, as important as any of the, measures for competitive balance is the perception of the fan in the market. When you sign a free agent, you don't know what you're going to get in the field. He may or may not make you better, but at least during the wintertime, it generates a certain excitement that's good for your market. It expands the impression that you're trying, and that's important to the business as well. So that is Manfred basically acknowledging that, like, when teams spend, fans like that. And there aren't a lot of teams doing that. And he realizes it, is acknowledging that that is probably why fans are feeling disappointed. They're not excited. They are not optimistic. And so if the league feels that sentiment has gotten to the point where it's hindering, it is making the fan experience worse, that is how they are going to take that and try and leverage that into new structures in the new CBA, whether it's a good thing or not, because that is how they're going to phrase it, is we're trying to make the league what the fan wants. You can say that's BS. You can say that that's negotiating, that's all like a manipulation of the situation to get what the owners want and to make more money. Like that all might be true, but that is how I believe they are going to be framing this. And in some cases it is accurate. That is, there are fans that are feeling, and we know, we're getting emails from them all the time. We understand, like, that is how they're going to portray pursuing things like this.
What's interesting is they're saying the same thing as the union. Like, both sides are saying it's not the Dodgers, it's the system, but then they just obviously have very different ideas how to fix the system.
Yes, absolutely. And then the other thing is, right, I mean, he was like, everyone's like, well, CBA is going to expire. And it's like, there's still going to be two more seasons before that happens. And clearly, because of how ugly it got last time, Manfred has no interest in doing this publicly any sooner than he absolutely has to. And honestly, I appreciate that, because I'm not exactly interested in getting into this anytime soon.
I agree. But like, why can't we start now? Like,
well, right.
Or else Vlad Jr. becomes a free agent. Like, right. I get this is how negotiations work. I do. But it's like, can't we just start working on this right now, and then we don't have to yell about it later? Whatever. I'm not a labor lawyer.
That's fine. But anyway, those were the main things. I am very excited to talk more about the challenge system, because we are going to be seeing it and having feelings about it, and you're going to be seeing major league players looking like fools or looking like geniuses. Like, this will be great. This is going to be really fun. I've been a proponent of this system for a while now, and I'm excited to see it in action in spring training as soon as today, as I will be at the spring training opener between the Dodgers and Cubs, and Camelback Ranch is one of the stadiums that will have this system in place. So I am looking forward to, like, Chris Taylor challenging a ball strike call and being told he's a dummy. That should be fun.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, good, bad, ugly. Thanks. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Let's just get right into it. The good, the bad, the ugla. One thing good, one thing bad, one thing ugla from the week that was in the world of baseball. What is ugla? Odd, unique, weird, notable. I'll go first. What was good? Yesterday, I went to Astros camp and I saw Jose Altuve. Still there, like Will Smith in the empty house. None of his friends are...
Hey, Lance McCullers coming back. Come on now.
Sure. Anyway, Altuve, what was notable? He was in left field. He is playing left field. It certainly seems like he's going to be the everyday left fielder for the Houston Astros this season. Notable, of course, nobody has played more games at second base than Jose Altuve since Jose Altuve got called up in 2011, I believe. He is probably going to be a Hall of Fame second baseman at some point, and the decision to move him to left field is bizarre. It is bizarre, but it is also good. It is good because it is bizarre, and it is unique, and it is something weird to follow. Why are they doing this? Why are the Astros doing this? Well, Altuve kind of sucks at second base now. Unfortunately, it is a bummer, but he is getting older. He has gray hairs. He looks more worn. He is slower. His defensive range at second base was abysmal. And so the Astros will move him to left field, where there is less space at home in their stadium than there is anywhere else in baseball. And he's going to give it a go. I quite enjoyed watching him take fly ball practice next to Yordan Alvarez, who is the tallest boy, and Altuve, obviously, the most diminutive boy. This is just a hilarious, fascinating, compelling thing. There's so much unfamiliarity with him at this camp. New faces, new play, new position. Really going to be fun to see how it goes.
Yeah, I do think when we talked about this possibility earlier in the offseason, we had not directly acknowledged. And it sounds like the reporting from Chandler Rome is that this is something, as you mentioned, like they've been talking about this. This is not, I know it caught a lot of us off guard when this first became a story over the offseason, but it seems like the Astros have kind of been, yeah, we need to do this sooner rather than later. It is also interesting because, I mean, remember they extended him. Is Altuve, yes, is it better for him to be playing left? I suppose. This is also some guy that's, you know, about to turn 35 and has, you know, 4 or 5 more years on his contract. So what's even, like, I guess Altuve, the 37-year-old DH, is that even more interesting than, well, obviously Yordan's still going to be there. So he's going to find a place to play. And I guess left field is the answer. So we'll see.
One more factor here. The Astros' two best pitchers this season will probably be Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown.
Yes.
If everything goes right and they make the playoffs, they will start games 1 and 2 of a playoff series. Both of those guys get a lot of...
On the ground.
Ground balls.
Hopefully
ground
not balls. Fly balls to left. Hopefully not laser beams to left field that Jose Altuve has to track down. Yes.
They get a disproportionately sense. High number of ground balls, and it makes more sense to have a rangier person playing second base. Mm-hmm. So that whole thing is good. I find it compelling. What's good for you?
My good this week is Matt Allen is coming back. Who's Matt Allen?
Who?
Matt Allen was the Mets' third round pick out of a high school in Florida in 2019. Matt Allen was one of the best high school pitchers in that class. They gave him $2.5 million. I think it was one of the largest bonuses given to a high school player in that class. And Matt Allen pitched briefly as a minor leaguer in 2019. And since then, obviously 2020, there weren't a lot of minor league pitchers, doing stuff. But Matt Allen has been very injured since then. And he has had two Tommy John surgeries. I think he had another procedure at some point. But Matt Allen is back. Matt Allen turns 24 in April. And it's just amazing when these guys go through all these surgeries and injuries and come back. And according to Anthony DiComo in his story, he's throwing line BPs and he's 94 to 97. I mean, the talent for these guys. We watched this up close with our friend Brent Honeywell. It is an amazing thing. The determination and the work that goes into like even getting back to the point to be able to do this, let alone whether or not Matt Allen will one day be a big leaguer. But Yeah, Dacoma has a great story on MLB about his comeback and how obviously everybody in the organization is rooting for him. And if he can become something, again, not having pitched at all since 2019 is even, I think, longer of a layoff than Brent had at any point, which is pretty amazing. So obviously rooting for him, and that would be quite the story.
I think we also overlook the mental side of this. You know, not being able physically to do the thing that you have built your whole life around takes a toll. And then the rehab, the repetitiveness of it, and like that takes an enormous toll as well. And so even to have the desire and the drive to keep going is great, is really good. From one Mets pitcher who's pitching to a Mets pitcher who's not pitching, Frankie Montas, that's my bad. The Mets signed Frankie Montas, a starting pitcher, a right-hander, this winter for, I believe, 2 years and $34 million. Now, Frankie Montas, a year ago, he played baseball not particularly well. He had a 4.84 ERA for the Reds and the Brewers, traded at the deadline. Frankie Montas showed up to camp and immediately said, "I got a boo-boo. My lat is bad. I don't feel good." They did a imaging on it, and he's going to be out for quite a while, 4 to 6 weeks, until he starts throwing again, which means it's probably around 10 to 12 before he's all built up. And it is a great reminder that the Mets, for all the money they have spent on their offense, the starting pitching is just a big shrug emoji right now. Last year, this pitching development staff at the big leagues helped a lot of pitchers get a lot better. Jose Quintana, Luis Severino, Sean Manaea, David Peterson. And it seems like they're just trying to do that again. As of right now, the Mets rotation is Sean Manaea, David Peterson, Kodai Senga, who had one regular season start, Paul Blackburn, who has a chronic back issue, it seems, Griffin Canning, who gave up more home runs in baseball last year than anybody else, and Clay Holmes, who was a closer, and Tyler McGill, who rules and should be in the ballpark.
Yeah, people like McGill. So McGill's always the one that floats back to the top, and it's like, damn, that guy's actually pretty good.
Right. Why is his ERA above four? So this is all to say that the Mets pitching rotation, it's not bad, but it is not good right now.
No. Yeah. And again, like once we get started to get into season preview mode and we're comparing them with the Braves and the Phillies, like these are the kind of things where we start leaning away from the Mets. And it is funny to think about them as a team spending that much money and then being like the second wild card, but very possible.
It's like putting crappy tires on a Lamborghini. GM Brian Cashman just walked by outside. I should have asked him what he thought about the Mets rotation, but I missed him.
I'm sure he would have told you. My bad this week. This could be my ugla, but it's so funny. Did you see the video of Shohei Ohtani parking?
No.
This honestly is probably more ugla, but bad and ugla were kind of interchangeable. TMZ exclusive video of Shohei Ohtani attempting to parallel park. The Dodgers recently held their annual chicken wing eating contest in Glendale, where the entire organization shows up and watches a bunch of team employees eat a bunch of chicken wings. Shohei Ohtani, obviously not one of those people, but he is a good teammate and a good friend. And so TMZ, someone was just standing there in Glendale getting video of Ohtani parking his Porsche in what appears to be like a takeout only parking spot. I don't know, but it seems like they have designated, they probably set up, they said, "Hey, Shohei's going to park here." The problem is that it took Shohei about 80 seconds to back into this spot with Will Ireton, Dodgers interpreter, and I believe that is the head of Dodgers team security, who you will always see everywhere with Shohei all the time. This is so funny. This is one of the most ridiculous videos of all time, and it's just great, right? Because it's so funny. TMZ story, it's this exclusive story, and then it's like, this is what I would imagine they would go with. It's like, all right, what's Shohei bad at? We're all trying to find his flaws. Well, here you go. I have a very obvious takeaway to this, but what is yours?
One, he never parallel parks, like ever.
He doesn't drive.
Is the first thing.
Homie wasn't driving. Who was driving him around? It's not complicated. We know who that was. Like, I'm not saying he'd never driven a car before last year, but guys.
But even then, he wasn't parallel parking, because yes. Where is he ever have to park?
Exactly.
At his house? Exactly. He parks at his house where it's a driveway, and he parks at the stadium where it's a parking spot. Or we're going valet, right?
Those are the
options. Or we're going valet.
Yeah.
Number two, embarrassing performance. This is a easy spot. This is a layup. There's got to be a backup camber in this freaking Porsche.
This is
0 out of 10. Maybe I'm too tough because, you know, I am a New York City street parker. And I consider my parallel parking abilities to be quite superb.
Yeah, but you earned that rep.
This is an embarrassment. And I think, in fact, he should be suspended for this by the team. Mm-hmm. We can't have this in our organization. We can't let this play.
I think the argument in his favor is if someone was filming you parallel parking.
No. He goes out there every day and he takes at-bats around cameras. This is not someone who should be afraid of the moment.
But this is, well, we found it. Anyway, Shohei Ohtani, bad at parking. What's Ugla?
I want to talk about fruit. More specifically, fruit. Yeah. Oh, you know, the food.
Yeah.
Be familiar with
a lot
fruit.
Of different foods. Okay, go ahead.
The leagues for spring training are called the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League. And I think that's a bad name because, Jordan, did you know that Florida, which is the Grapefruit League, is not the top producer of grapefruits in the U.S. California has a higher production of grapefruit.
I should know that. I'm a big grapefruit guy, but I did not know that.
Jordan dunking on everybody that he doesn't take pills that get screwed up by grapefruit. Anyway, my point here, right, is it's confusing. Oh, Grapefruit League. I'd be like, that's in California, right? Because they have produced the most grapefruit.
Yeah. I mean, I associate more with like oranges, right? That's what I'm thinking about in
funny
Florida.
You say that. Funny you say that. In 2023, Florida ranked first in the U.S. Sorry, this is via the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. In 2023, Florida ranked first in the U.S. in the production for floriculture, Valencia oranges, sugarcane, watermelons, and sweet corn. So I hereby propose it should be the Sweet Corn League.
I was going to say the Pomelo League. How we feel about the Pomelo League?
Sweet Corn League. And then did you know that, Jordan, there are more different species of
cacti?
Of cacti.
In Florida?
In Texas than there are in Arizona. Yeah. So if I hear the Cactus League, that's not in Arizona. Maybe it's in Texas.
Thinking West Texas is really doing the heavy lifting there, I imagine.
So I propose it should be the Palo Verde League. Palo Verde is the state tree of Arizona. Spring training will start today in the Palo Verde League with the Cubs and the Dodgers, and tomorrow in the Sweet Corn League with the Rays and the Yankees.
You should have brought this up earlier this week, because then at Media Day, in between all the questions to Manfred about the Dodgers, I could have been like, Commissioner, have you guys considered changing the names of the spring training leagues? Where is that on your priority list right now?
Ugla.
Ugla. That is Ugla. My Ugla, I was going to go bad, but I think it's a little harsh. It's this tweet from the Watch Marquee account.
What is Watch Marquee?
The Cubs broadcasting network. And it's a photo of Kyle Tucker and Seiya Suzuki. And the caption is, outfield besties. And this is an interesting caption. And I guess it's Ugla for me, because how many games will these two players play in the outfield together? I just think it's like calling them besties when the whole story is that Seiya Suzuki is no longer playing outfield because of Kyle Tucker is a great spin, which is why it's kind of Ugla. But it's also... It's probably objectively false and misleading to show them in the outfield together and call them outfield besties when it's really catering to Seiya Suzuki being like, I'm an outfielder.
Right. He's an outfielder DHing. That's what they're trying to convince him.
It's okay. We're outfield besties. We're not DH besties. Who would be DH besties? Center,
Ian Happ and left. DH besties will be Jesse Winker and Starling Marte for the New York Mets.
That's a perfect transition to the only bit of news we should have mentioned that we haven't yet before we say goodbye. The Cubs signed Justin Turner. There you go. The DH besties will be Justin Turner and Michael Bush. Alexander Canario out of options. Those are your DH
besties. The thing that's
besties.
Funny about this tweet to me is that it's a picture of Saya hugging Kyle Tucker. And so if you didn't know anything about this, you'd be like, Seiya Suzuki hates playing outfield and is so happy he doesn't have to do it anymore that Kyle Tucker is here and he's hugging him and thanking him. When in reality, Seiya Suzuki has been pretty vocal about the fact that he didn't want a DH and the Cubs were like, sucks for you.
Sorry, buddy. Here's Kyle Tucker. Like, Kyle Tucker, let's hey, Red Sox, take notes. Look, everything's fine. All you need to do, all whatever Nesson or the Red Sox just need to post a picture of Devers and Bregman kind of hugging it out of third base. Third base besties. See, it's a little more complicated when you're talking about an infield position. You can't even pretend like they're both going to play there at the same time.
Just go with an interesting shift. Who says no?
Manfred says no. That's illegal.
Manfred says no.
We're done. That's it. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, producer Brett Rader. Filling in for Andrew Hartz. We love Brett. Thank you, Brett. Brett makes this show be good, and we appreciate him very much. You can email us baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. I am off to Camelback Ranch to watch the Dodgers play baseball. Yoshinobu Yamamoto against Jake. Do you see who's starting for the Cubs?
No.
Cody Poteet on the
mound.
Cody Poteet. So I'm going to go enjoy that, and then I'm heading home on Saturday. Thank you all for listening to Baseball Barbacast. We'll talk to you soon.